We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. That guy over there, the one, the only, the incomparable Dan Rubenstein. SolidVerbal.com is the website. Don't forget to go on out to Verballers.com to check out our Patreon. And of course, if nothing more, if you like the show, go on out to Apple or really anywhere you download this show and leave us a review. It is much appreciated. Dan Rubenstein, sir, how are you this fine Sunday morning?
I woke up cold. It was mid-30s here. I'm still a newbie Midwest soft amateur. But I am here to tell you my promise to you, the college football fan listening, be it Sunday via Verballers.com and the subscribers thereof, or Monday, Tuesday, whatever. I am here, we are here, to be your warm college football fuzzy throw blanket in a time of a little bit of frost around the sport. No pun intended. I'm sorry, Nebraska fans. We're here to warm you up. We're going to do our best.
We are going to do our level best. Every week now seems to have a little bit of crazy in it. I'm sorry in advance, Iowa fans. The reverbs got a little aggressive this week.
Oh, no.
Your boy was in charge of the reverbs this week. We had a little bit of a mix-up, Dylan and I.
Yeah, it happens.
We both did the reverbs. So you're going to get Ty's version, much like Taylor's new upcoming version of Red. And then somewhere out on Instagram, we'll post Dylan's version, which is a little bit more multifarious.
I love the Taylor Swift illusion, Ty. Just Taylor's version, Ty's version, Dylan's version. It's great.
Without further ado, here are those week 7 reverbs. Have a listen.
As an Iowa fan, I find myself begging for the backup to be better than the starter.
Hi, this is Adam in Minneapolis.
This is Colin in Lincoln again.
Hey, this is Big Mike from Atlanta.
This is Evan from Stillwater, Oklahoma. And I just got one thing to say. Ride 'em, Cowboys.
You know, I gotta say, with all these blown leads, really bad offense in the second half, don't you think it's about time Texas fires Tom Herman and finds a new head coach?
Texas is back to doing what they do every year. Winning an early season game, the hype train gets started, and then they inevitably implode and spontaneously combust over the course of the next 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Can we please get a dramatic reading of Virginia Tech's first half offensive possessions? Punt. Turnover on down. Punt. 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 Interception. Punt. Punt. End of half on a -2-yard drive.
Is it unfair to say that the Carrier Dome is where Syracuse goes to die?
I still cannot believe Dino Babers called a timeout to try and kick a field goal.
I'm really sad to say that I think DJU and really the whole Clemson team is just interesting adjacent.
Can a QB come off the bench any colder than the former grad assistant Zeb Nolan came off the bench to lead the game-winning drive against Vanderbilt?
I don't know how, but despite our best efforts, the Ducks still win.
I think after last night, Oregon joins me on the list of things that disappoint my parents. But I guess go Ducks.
Win your clunkers? Although at this point, I'm just kind of numb to the fact that they're all clunkers.
Just in case you missed it, the Utes are now in first place in the Pac-12 South.
Hi, AP voters. Quick question. Why didn't you rank Baylor this week?
My Baylor Bears are bowl eligible. Dude alert from Mr. Dylan Doyle today. 2 touchdowns receiving and rushing. I forgot to mention. He also had a sack because he's our starting linebacker.
This is Brocktober.
Red Rover. Thank God it's Brocktober.
I want to let you know the only sure things in life are death, taxes, and Colorado State beating New Mexico. Go Rams.
The backup was better than the starter, but LSU's entire team was backups, and today we were better than the starter. No doubt about it.
Well, looks like Iowa's a fraud.
The 2007 number 2 killer in Iowa City with a crock pot.
You know how the old saying goes, when you have 2 quarterbacks, you have none. When you have 3 quarterbacks, well, that's the perfect recipe for a good old-fashioned crock pot in the number 2 Iowa.
David Bell's got to be a retired dude after he shut down Iowa's dream of a perfect season.
What the heck happened to Purdue? I mean, did Drew Brees suit up for one last game?
But imagine how bad they would be beating them if they would only fake injuries to slow down that electric Iowa offense.
It really does make you wonder, Dan, doesn't it?
Oh, man. It was slow going for that Iowa offense. I don't know if that's where you want to start. If you want to, I mean, I think the SEC was probably the conference of the day top to bottom in terms of noteworthy results, but you have the number 2 team going down at home to Purdue.
Yeah, I think that's unfortunately where we need to start for Iowa fans. At the top of all of these recap shows, we do our level best to highlight the key action of the week. The number 2 team in the country going down again to Purdue, which is crazy that Purdue always finds himself in this situation. I think we need to talk about 24-7 Purdue's big victory on the road in Kinnick Stadium over the Iowa Hawkeyes. Over the last 7 weeks now, Iowa is officially the 6th top 5 team to lose. They join Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Oregon, and just Penn State from like a week ago.
Yeah.
How much of this game did you watch?
Almost the entirety.
How did that feel on your eyes?
It was mentally, emotionally, and spiritually exhausting. Other than watching David Bell. Holy moly. You know how I feel about receivers who are so obviously and clearly the best player for an offense and the defense keys on them, especially a really great pass defense like Iowa's, and they still get loose.
Yeah.
That is my kink. That does it for me. And just specifically David Bell. I mean, he was wonderful. He was wonderful. So
incredible.
I'm going to start with the positive here, because Purdue going on the road, and sure, now the Oregon State win looks better. There's a feistiness to Purdue that's been impressive. Aiden O'Connell, AOC, really good. On target. There were timely plays in the red zone. I came away impressed with Purdue's ability to perform against a top flight defense in a difficult spot. Now, it was a letdown spot for sure for Iowa after the Penn State win. But yeah, I'm going to start with the positivity of Purdue. And then it's something that is not unique to us. This is not a unique take to what we have been saying. It was Iowa without the benefit of short fields and turnovers flipping things.
I wrote literally the exact same thing down on my note sheet.
Now,
it's a different story when Iowa is losing the turnover battle.
Right.
And they are not getting short fields for their offense.
Right. And it's a wonderful way to win when it's working, right? Like, you win however you should win. Doesn't matter. If that's your strategy, if that's your mode, great. But the problem is, and I still think Iowa can win games against pretty good teams without generating a ton of turnovers, but it's different. And so they score 7 points. Spencer Petras finishes, and I know he was forcing things late, what, 4 picks in this game? That we had our questions. We're like, what do they have outside of Tyler Goodson, right? Ivory Kelly Martin made plays at times, but like, what do they have over the course of four quarters that's interesting to me? And I don't think anybody believed Iowa was the number two team in the country, but as a top 10, top 12 team.
Sure.
Where is the weaponry on offense coming from to win games in various ways, which inevitably a top 10 team needs to be able to do? And, you know, we saw it a couple years ago with that Penn State-Michigan stretch where I think they scored 3 and 12 points where they weren't getting short fields. Where is that for Iowa? I mean, far be it for us to complain about big picture Iowa football. It's in a very strong place.
Sure.
But you score 7 points at home against Purdue with attention on you. Your offense isn't ready. Your offense is not ready for that type of close-up. It was a 4K exposure of Iowa's offense in front of the world.
It, again, when you don't win the turnover battle and when your offense doesn't have short fields, if you're Iowa, that's the issue. And they finally played a team that by hook or by crook stayed out of its own way is what it amounts to. It's a really good defense. They force opposing offenses into bad spots.
Yeah.
That didn't so much happen against Purdue. Purdue was pretty good offensively. You mentioned Aiden O'Connell, David Bell, 11 for 240. I know you called him out with the bell, but we need to mention that stat line. He was basically unguardable in this game. And yeah, Purdue took it to him. They outgained Iowa by a 464 to 271 margin, a thorough beatdown. In any way you want to shade it, like, this is what went down. Purdue beat him straight up. And Purdue is an interesting case now moving forward. You know, I'm not going to sit here on this altar and attest to Purdue going, you know, 9 wins, whatever, but for all their flaws, it's not a bad defense. Between David Bell, between George Karloftis,
Big George is so good.
Maintains a dominant force up front. You're right. There's a serious pluck factor there for the Purdue Boilermakers. They've got Michigan State. They've got Ohio State left on the schedule. Not saying Purdue's pulling more upsets, but beware of the Boilers. This is a plucky team. Yeah. They play hard. They played hard against Notre Dame a couple weeks ago. You know, this is not the first time that I've seen Purdue play this year. And every time I come away thinking the same thing. This is a team that's got that pluck factor. And it just so happens they caught Iowa in the right spot. Maybe a bit of a letdown. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just Iowa's time for the luck to run out. But 24-7, it was a thorough beatdown of the Hawkeyes in Kinnick. So good on Purdue and good for Jeff Brohm.
Absolutely. Well, I said big drum, big letdown. Was not expecting this. I don't know. What do you translate 24-7 to? In the Big Ten West, it's 24-7. In any other conference, this is what, 38-13?
I think
this
so.
It was ugly. It was a second half of Iowa just banging its head against the wall, just QB sneak after QB sneak, and just an inability to find that second or third pitch.
Exactly. So with Iowa going down, it does beg the question, will Cincinnati be the new number two? We are recording this on a Sunday. My guess is we will find out shortly. Some of you listening to this on Monday will already know. But that is my curiosity now over the next 48 hours. What are the pollsters going to do with Cincinnati? We can talk about what Oklahoma did for Bama, their part here momentarily. Sure. And Bama. But Cincinnati won 56-21 in resounding fashion. Jerome Ford, 189, 4 touchdowns. They disposed of UCF. We expected that was going to be something of a runaway train, given UCF's injuries and some of their struggles on offense right now. But Cincinnati, for their part, doing what they have to try and move up in the polls to continue building their case as one of the top teams in the country. So we will see.
Yeah, impressive that they did it immediately. It was 35-7 at halftime.
It was a flash fry, dude. It was a flash fry. It was over before it started. So
we
will see on that front. Let's move over to the SEC, though. I think you rightfully called out that that was probably the most interesting conference of the day, and we will start at the very top with Georgia 30, Kentucky 13. And thinking back on the preview show on week 7, I specifically asked you whether or not you thought Kentucky could get to 14 points. Do you remember that conversation?
I do remember the conversation. Did we both take the points, or did you give the Georgia points?
We both took the points.
Okay, good.
We both took the points. You, if I recall correctly, said that you thought Kentucky could get to 14. It may require a weird backdoor cover situation.
Yeah.
lo and behold, Dan, they would have gotten to 14 if not for a blocked extra point.
Yeah.
Towards the very end of the game, but it was a bit of a backdoor cover situation. Wish Mark Stoops would have gone for two to hit that over.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another conversation for another point in time. You know, to be honest, I didn't think Kentucky looked all that bad.
No, not at all.
I thought they looked okay. It's just that Georgia's defense is so damn good. Kentucky was held to just 51 yards on the ground, which meant that Will Levis had to throw it 42 times. Normally, that wouldn't leave me with a great sense of comfort, but Will Levis was fine.
He was fine.
No pass went longer for 16 yards. Georgia did a good job keeping a lid on the defense, but Kentucky, for their part, I think tried their best. They did okay. They looked fine out there. It was just, again, the defense and Stetson Bennett. Stetson Bennett being crazy efficient with the football for the Georgia offense. 14 of 20, 250 yards, three touchdowns. The key is no interceptions. Brock Bauer, the freshman tight end. Brock Bauer's developing a great rapport with Stetson Bennett. He walked away with 101 through the air and two touchdowns. So look, this is, I think, what we're coming to know of Georgia. The defense may be one of the best we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
The offense, as long as Stetson Bennett is going to remain efficient, not turn the ball over, and if you want to call him a game manager, I don't care, it doesn't matter. As long as he keeps turning in performances like this, they're going to be awfully hard to beat.
Yeah, I mean, backup quarterback, I think Munkin has done a really nice job putting Georgia's offense in a position. It does serve the defense at times, but they pick up first downs. They pick up yardage when they need it. They get into the end zone. The offense has been creative enough. Obviously, with wide receiver injuries, there have been setbacks in terms of what the offense can do in terms of playbook. But Brock Bowers has emerged really impressively. Ladd McConkie, we saw last week, really nice out wide. And so, yeah, you're getting in a territory with the Georgia defense where you start getting comparisons and you start saying, like, oh man, they've only allowed four touchdowns or six touchdowns. Or like they've allowed fewer yards than the Braves have allowed runs. You know, like there's all these like you get cross sports stuff and like it's an incredible, incredible defense. And the formula for beating Georgia is incredibly clear if you don't have the talent that Georgia has. Luck. Like you have to get off the field at every conceivable moment on defense. You have to pop something uncharacteristic, probably three or four times on offense. You have to get a crazy special teams mistake from the Dogs or two. Like there is a cocktail needed to beat Georgia unless you have comparable talent, which is like 2.5 teams right now. So the Georgia defense is incredible. The offense is impressive given the limitations that they have personnel wise. I don't know how you can come away anything but crazy impressed by Georgia and even just impressed by Kentucky, who to me still remains a good team.
I sort of take exception to calling Stetson Bennett a backup quarterback at this point.
I hear you. I mean, the coaching staff has viewed him as a backup quarterback.
I know technically speaking,
he
is the backup quarterback, but JT Daniels can't stay on the field, man. He's hurt all the time. And Stetson Bennett, credit to the kid. Not knowing always when he's going to come in, doing his part. He obviously played that role pretty well for a good chunk of last year. And he's again thrust into the spotlight now in 2021. And he's done an admirable job. Look, it helps when you have that defense. It helps when you've got talent around you on offense, even if they're still trying to figure out a way to assemble all those pieces. But they are clearly the class of college football at this point in time, if only because of that defense. And he keeps turning in really solid performances where he's not hurting his team. Georgia's just real tough to beat. They're real tough to beat, and I didn't think Kentucky looked bad. I stand by that.
To quote the solid verbal needlepoint pillow, the best availability. And Stetson Bennett's, you know, he's ready to strap it up every week. Great.
Let's keep it in the SEC because, again, so many interesting storylines to unpack.
Sure.
Alabama wins by 40 over Mississippi State. I don't know if that came as any great surprise, 49-9. Elsewhere in the conference, though, we had some interesting things transpire. We had the Ole Miss-Tennessee game. Ole Miss wins by 5, 31-26 in Knoxville. We had Auburn winning on the road, 38-23 over Arkansas. Again, that was a battle of two teams that we talked about in the preview. Maybe a little bit out of gas because both had gone through a gauntlet of teams the first, couple weeks here of the season. we had LSU 49-42 over Florida, which was a crazy game that I did not see coming.
Yep.
We had A&M by 21 over Mizzou. And then we had Zeb Noland, not to be outdone, coming off the bench for South Carolina to knock off Vandy 21-20.
Late.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, where do you want to start here in the SEC? There's really just a lot to unpack.
I guess we can just go kind of chronological. LSU Florida was early, and the Florida defense didn't even make it to Baton Rouge.
No.
They didn't even make it. This was a wild game. We had, what, a Hail Mary at the half?
Justin
that
Shorter.
Was
yep.
Among the least contested Hail Marys. I think the biggest defense that LSU put up, the biggest D that they put up in that specific play was a DB after the fact giving the, like, not a catch, incomplete signal. But nobody turned and tried to make a play on the ball on a Hail Mary,
yeah,
which is pretty wild. But you know what? LSU wins that game largely because of Ty Davis-Price. He went for, what, 287? A record against not only Florida, but a record for LSU as well, taking down Leonard Fournette's record.
Yep.
I mean, when you have Todd Grantham and the Florida defense on the other side of the ball, and it's clear early on what they are going to allow you to do, there's only one decision if you're calling LSU's plays. Run, run, run. Right? I mean, go with what's working.
I think so. You know, LSU came into this game, and one of the talking points about the offense is that they can't run.
Right. Totally.
They can't run. They really only run the ball effectively in one other game.
They improved against Kentucky, though. They definitely took a step forward, even in a very comfortable losing effort.
And this is a Florida team, by the way, that's been pretty good at stopping the run.
Yeah.
So it was significant that they would turn in a performance like this against a team with a pretty good rushing defense. And who knows? There have been all sorts of rumors swirling about the future of Coach O. LSU clearly got the job done. They were a 10.5-point dog at kickoff. On the Florida side, 4 turnovers. Emory Jones was not good. They brought in Anthony Richardson, who also threw 2 picks, but was better.
Definitely better.
Accounted for 4 touchdowns and damn near led Florida back to get the W here. They've definitely got a quarterback controversy now. Did you see what Anthony Richardson said when they asked him about if he's going to transfer?
Yeah, didn't really ease the minds of Florida fans concerned about losing Anthony Richardson as he splits time with Emory Jones. It was sort of like
I have the quote.
Hit
quote,
me.
I can't really speak on that. Time is the only thing that tells. Right now, I'm a Gator. Clearly, that was not an emphatic confirmation of his participation on the Florida Gators football program. He's since come out and tried to clarify and say, I misspoke. It wasn't what I meant. And okay. I
hear you. In the emotion of a loss, I've been there, Ty. I've been there.
I'll say the wrong thing 8 times on this podcast. So it's not, you know, we get it.
Yeah.
I understand where he's coming from. He's a local kid. It would be a shame if he decided to leave. Mm-hmm. But I would expect now moving forward, Florida's going to have a bit of a controversy on their hands because, as I think you mentioned rightfully a couple weeks back before Anthony Richardson got hurt, he comes in and there's a little bit of a lightning strike quality to him. You know, he can do things. He's a big kid. He can run like the wind. He's got a rocket for an arm. He can do things that I don't think Emory Jones can. And so how they use him now moving forward, how Dan Mullen chooses to deploy those services will obviously remain a pretty big talking point around the SEC and on this podcast. We're going to have to talk about what goes down because Florida's got a big game on Halloween weekend against Georgia.
Correct.
They need to turn in a much better performance offensively and defensively if they want to have any shot in that game. I would expect that we're going to see more Anthony Richardson now moving forward because LSU's defense has been like very average thus far. They're hurt beyond all belief. And for Emory Jones to look as poor as he did against this defense, albeit on the road,
yeah,
just not a very encouraging
tough place
sign.
To play. Yeah. No, I mean, The tentacles on this story are going in all sorts of directions between Florida fans and their relationship with Todd Grantham. And, you know, worse than being consistently bad is being inconsistent. And you see them make plays against Alabama and really take it to Alabama up front, even though they do lose that game. But for long stretches, that Florida defense looked very strong up front against the Tide. And then to come out and look, seasons happen. Guys get beat up. I get all of that. But it's just Todd Grantham is a coordinator you can't count on.
No.
if you're a Florida fan,
third
right?
Grantham. So third and Grantham lives.
Third and Grantham lives, and happy for LSU. It seems like they're going in a direction where they're going to be looking for a new coach sooner rather than later. But to get a win against Florida, a ranked team, and I've never seen a quarterback jump as much as Max Johnson jumps. He's happy to jump as he throws the ball. I came away impressed with LSU's ability to regroup after a really, really sluggish start to the season.
Let's talk about the Ole Miss-Tennessee thing.
Yeah.
Again, Ole Miss wins 31-26. You may have read some headlines about this. Here's what went down. Ole Miss stops Tennessee 1 yard shy of a first down on a 4th-and-24 pass with like just over a minute left, something like that. After the play, they go to the review. They confirm the spot of the ball. It was very close, but indeed, Tennessee was short. Tennessee fans at that point start throwing stuff on the field.
Yeah.
They're throwing bottles. They're throwing golf balls, which is not great.
Why do you have golf balls in the stadium to begin with?
Unless they're giving them away at the door, which I can't imagine.
I guess. They weren't orange.
unless they're playing the yellow balls that I play.
Yeah.
Or unless they're selling them in the gift store somewhere in the stadium. The only reason you bring golf ball to the field is to throw it at Lane Kiffin.
Right.
What else? Empty mustard containers or maybe full mustard containers? I don't know.
Somebody pointed out that it may have been a flask.
A flask. Okay.
Which I respect the creativity of the unusual flask. You know, the sunscreen bottle, the mustard bottle, whatever.
Sure.
Not the flinging thereof.
Correct. Correct. So all mayhem breaks loose. They try to get folks off the field. It was like a 20-minute delay in the last minute of the game here. Not a good look for Tennessee fans. I'm not going to do the whole holier-than-thou thing, obviously.
No, do it! Do it!
No,
do
it's it. A few clowns. It's a few clowns that...
Well, okay, here's
sully
the
reputation for a bunch of good fans who were there. It's the same deal as the Iowa thing from a week ago with the booing of the injuries. Like,
sure.
You hate to paint with a broad brush, but it was a bad look. It was a really bad look.
So, okay, let's talk about the football first. The football thing is, it was a really good game. It was a really entertaining game, which I know we were very hopeful for, given Tennessee's offense improving and the defense improving and the running game improving. Now, obviously, Tyon Evans beat up and doesn't play in this game. I thought Jabari Small did a nice job, made plays for Tennessee. Hendon Hooker had a very nice game and made plays. Then there were a few moments of, I would say, referee anger from Tennessee fans, right? You had the Matt Corral fumble, scoop, and score that was then, in retrospect, determined that he had finished his forward progress, but there was never a whistle.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what what Tennessee defenders should be doing if they don't hear a whistle and a quarterback gets the ball stripped. Like, that's, I get the frustration from Tennessee fans. Now, the spot seemed okay to me on the 4th-and-24.
I think it was the right spot, yeah.
I think it seemed okay, and not to mention, even not converting that, Tennessee still had a shot. Joe Milton eventually, he comes in because Hendon Hooker's beat up, and he throws the ball just a little bit high in the end zone for what would have been potentially a game-winning touchdown, and then at the gun runs it out, which was a little bit odd, and... All things considered, I thought, you know, Matt Corral had a sensational game. When they weren't able to get much going on the ground otherwise, he was extending drives. He was making plays with his arm. He basically willed Ole Miss to a win in this one on the road in clearly a hostile environment, which sucked because leading up to that moment, like, you have the checkerboard stadium. Like, there was a terrific energy to this game.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have bottles being thrown onto the field, objects being thrown onto the field, the band, cheerleaders evacuating, the Ole Miss sideline coming out to the field to avoid getting pelted even more. And Ty, we all know that this wasn't the entire crowd. There weren't 150,000 bottles on the field.
Right.
But there weren't four bottles, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was a more sizable chunk than is a couple bad apples.
It was like
pissed.
A CONCACAF qualifier is what it was.
It was
there.
It was not just one section. They were coming from all over the stadium. Like, it's We all know, Ty, it's a subsect of insane fans. But this is not a fan base that needed this.
No.
This is definitely not a fan base that needed another black eye on its reputation. So if you're a Tennessee fan, and I saw, you know, there's like some radio clown, you know, arguing with Pat Forty.
Oh, man, that guy's having a rough morning. That's a rough morning for that dude.
Here's the thing. Turn your attention to the terrible, terrible fans, not to other people saying those are terrible fans.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's awful. It's all like, that's just, there's no place for it in the sport. And like, when you see like the SEC, it just means more. I saw somebody tweet, this is not my line, that like, it might just mean too much in Knoxville. It might just mean a little bit too much. We know it wasn't 100,000 fans.
Yeah.
Too many though.
All right. Well, good win for Ole Miss, by the way. Matt Corral, you mentioned he willed the team to victory.
Totally.
195 yards rushing for Matt Corral. 30 carries.
Incredible talent.
We're not kidding.
he
had a really good game. There's a reason why I think he's the front runner for the Heisman at this juncture, although things could change in a hurry. We'll talk about Caleb Williams in a little bit when we get to Oklahoma.
Right.
The only other thing I want to mention here in the SEC, the Auburn-Arkansas game. What a game here. This is a great game.
I loved it.
And we got good Bo Nix in this game, which I'm happy to say we've gotten more of good Bo Nix this year than bad Bo Nix, which we had seen in spots the previous two seasons. But the Tigers came back early in the second half. There was a 3-minute sequence of events that swung momentum completely in their favor. They got a scoop and score after a strip sack. They got a stop on fourth down and then a long touchdown pass to Demetrius Robertson. The story for Auburn was really big plays because they were outgained. Arkansas won a lot of the big categories that you would typically look at if you're going through the box score trying to do a postmortem, but Auburn won those moments, which we like to talk about here on the show, and they made big plays when it counted. Bo Nix, just superb. Probably his best game of the year, 21-26, 292, and two touchdowns through the air. Also ran for 42, including a long touchdown run. 38-23 was your final. Really nice win for Brian Harsin.
I would go as far as saying the best win of Bo Nix's, the best performance and win of Bo Nix's career.
Easily.
The difference to me is, and it's always impressive when he runs around and extends a play and finds a guy in a scramble drill or picks up a long gain with his feet, whatever. But he was making plays in rhythm in the passing game. He had time. He stepped into the pocket. There was one, to Demetrius Robertson?
Yep.
To, I think it was Javarius Johnson, caught another one of the longer touchdown passes. Like, he was operating within the offense and, you know, credit the offensive line for giving him time, even though they weren't opening up lanes consistently for Tank Bigsby and Jarquez Hunter. I just, you know, to go on the road, to have been benched not super long ago, to have faced Georgia and had the struggles that Auburn did offensively against Georgia, like everybody will, and to go to Penn State, and I thought he was fine against Penn State, but it was a disappointing loss for sure. But to go on the road, you know, a narrative where, you know, Bo Nix is especially bad or disappointing on the road, whatever, but to go on the road against a defense that has had struggles in the back end for sure, but an Arkansas team who has been in and won big games and perform like he did, I thought was just crazy impressive. So good for Auburn, good for Bo Nix. I thought the defense made plays when needed. You know, Arkansas was able to drive the field, and Treylon Burks is an absolute force. KJ Jefferson is good. But for the Auburn defense to make plays when it counted in those high leverage situations, I just, top to bottom, came away really impressed with Auburn. A very quiet 5-2, and, you know, losing to Penn State on the road in a whiteout and losing to Georgia. Like, there's no shame in either of that, but to respond like they have, really good for Auburn. War Eagle.
Yeah, no, an incredible showing for Bo Nix again. And I think if you're an Auburn fan, like you said, 5-2 very quietly, 5-2. There are some games on this schedule upcoming. I mean, not the least of which is the Iron Bowl that could, again, give this season a boost. And I think the larger takeaway here is that if Bo Nix can continue to show his good qualities more often than not, you got to feel good about what the future under Bo Nix looks like at quarterback, because he still has eligibility. I don't expect Bo Nix is leaving anytime soon. So I feel pretty good about that if I'm an Auburn fan.
Yeah, and they have a bye week before, Ole Miss and A&M.
Yep.
So it works. The schedule works out nicely just in terms of how it's all laid out. So, yeah, something to watch.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's jump over to the Big 12 because there was some interesting storylines on that side. We'll start with the Oklahoma State-Texas game. That was 32-24. How much of this game did you watch?
I was back and forth with this and LSU Florida for the most part in the early window.
Yeah. I tried to watch most of this game because you may recall on the preview show I talked about how I couldn't get a feel for either of these teams. I think I took points, but maybe Texas to win. I honestly don't recall.
Yeah.
But I did take the points here. And Oklahoma State on their side, you know, they got better, I think, as the game went on. They ended up winning this one sort of the way they've won all their games this year, with good defense and a running game behind Jalen Warren, who went off 193 on 33 carries. He had a really good game. And on the Texas side, again, Bijan Robinson did what Bijan Robinson does, but not a great game for Casey Thompson. Probably his roughest go yet in 2021, through two picks, one of which was really bad. We talked about that one this morning. Went back 85 yards for a touchdown. I came away kind of blasé on both of these teams. The Oklahoma, the Oklahoma State one to me, they're 6-0. It's the first time since 2015. You feel good about where you're at, certainly in the Big 12. I think they feel confident about how they're positioned and how they fought through all 60 minutes of this football game to knock off Texas on the road. All of that's good. The defense and the running game for sure are for real. But they're a rough watch, man. They're a rough watch. Spencer Sanders, I don't know if it's new. Maybe I just haven't been paying attention over the Spencer Sanders era. Maybe it's because he's barely on the field. But
yeah,
there's a little bit of old school Phil Jurkovic in that delivery when he's throwing passes.
You're right.
It's a long release. The receivers can't catch. At some point, the luck's going to run out for them.
It's still, of course, but it's still so weird that Oklahoma State's offense has fallen to the depths that it's fallen to. You know, they to go from having Biletnikoff quality receivers to like the great seasons of Chuba Hubbard, and they just can't put it together. And there is something to it. Feels like Spencer Sanders has been all over the place for 7 straight years, right? There's like a Tommy Armstrong quality to just like, oh, it's Spencer Sanders again, where like, okay, he's going to flash something that makes you think he's turned the corner. Like the back half of the season will be crazy, and then he'll have a 3-pick game. And so it seemed that way at times against Texas, and there is something to Texas fully slowing down in the second halves. I mean, to blow the game they did against Oklahoma and now to do it against Oklahoma State in consecutive weeks. I thought it was another game where they had 6 or 7 three and outs. Like there's the opening quarter, the opening salvo, quarter and a half, whatever for Texas. And then there's the second half, and second half Steve at the top. I hope it doesn't become a thing, but we're seeing this offense become, I don't know if it's predictable. I don't know if it's the offensive line wearing down, which it kind of seems like at times, but This is not a team ready to play four winning quarters against good teams consistently, and at least not right now. The offensive line looks pretty shaky. The back part of their defense looks shaky at times. The linebackers, they haven't been putting it together. And it's year one. It's whatever. My expectation for Texas was not, I think, where yours was. But still, disappointing that they're able to show what they show early on in games, then just quickly fade.
Yeah, it was the story of two teams going in opposite directions in this game. With the way Texas started out, I thought they were going to blow the doors off of Oklahoma State. But it took Oklahoma State a little bit to settle into the game. Spencer Sanders did get better, to his credit. Yeah. He did get better as the game wore on. I don't want to demean the win. This was a good win on the road.
Totally.
There's just a quality to Oklahoma State that I don't fully buy into yet. My guess is, just from reading some of the Oklahoma State sites, plenty of Cowboys fans feel the same way. But they're going to take an undefeated season however they can get it, right? It's an Iowa complex here. We'll take it. Doesn't matter how.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, we're not giving the defense enough credit. They were swarming. Jim Knowles has done nothing short of a sensational job with that defense.
Awesome job.
Great. What did I call him? Sir Blitz-a-lot when he came over from Duke? Yeah, he's been great.
He's been really good. Okay. On the other side of Oklahoma, we had the Sooners knocking off TCU 52-31. So we got some storylines to talk about here. First off, I think that pretty much does it for the Spencer Rattler era in Norman. Are we in agreement?
You drop 50 against TCU. Granted, maybe the worst TCU defense of the Gary Patterson era, unless I'm forgetting something. They came in 115th in points allowed per drive into the game.
Right.
And gave up, 52 in this one to a true freshman quarterback who is incredible, obviously.
He looked ridiculous. He is the first true freshman at Oklahoma to get a start since Cale Gundy, remember him, in 1990. His final line was 18 of 23 for 295 and four touchdowns. He also had 9 carries for 66 yards on the ground, including a long 41-yard touchdown run. So he can do it all.
Right.
Definitely seems to have that it quality where the heavens part a little bit when Caleb Williams walks out there. And it's just really hard to see Lincoln Riley having any reason to go back to Spencer Rattler at this point. I can't envision a scenario, unless there's an injury, you know, God forbid. I can't imagine, with the momentum he's been able to capture through a game and a half, any reason to go back to Spencer Rattler.
Right. And I still think there is going to be a game, be it against Oklahoma State's defense. You know, what does their remaining schedule in terms of defenses look like? It's probably nothing crazy other than Oklahoma State. Where they have Iowa State as well, right?
We've got games against Kansas and Texas Tech over the next 2 weeks. And then after the bye, it gets hard. Final 3 weeks are at Baylor, home against Iowa State.
Baylor,
and
on
the road for the Bedlam game in Stillwater.
So one of those teams, just from Caleb Williams being a true freshman, one of those teams is going to throw an entirely difficult half, at least, at him. And whether or not Oklahoma wins the game, whatever. But to see how he'll respond to that will be fascinating, because right now he looks electric with his feet, with his arm. And it wasn't just like, here's your one read and go. He was going through progressions at times. He was looking off safeties at times. He was making plays outside of the pocket at times. For a true freshman, and he is, I'm almost positive he's going to have struggles, because that just seems like it's what happens with these freshmen put into big spots for big teams and big scenarios. But man, with his legs, with his arms, downfield, the confidence, the decision making. I mean, poor Oklahoma that they had to turn to their backup when their preseason Heisman frontrunner didn't fully work out. But man, Caleb Williams has all the makings of somebody special.
And by the way, Kirk Herbstreit was dropping the H word too.
Sure. I'm sure.
He was dropping the Heisman in reference to Caleb Williams. Because
I mean, any Oklahoma quarterback is going to get that benefit of the doubt with Lincoln Riley there.
Any Oklahoma quarterback gets the benefit of the doubt, but it is a crazy year. It's a weird year. There are no true front runners. Maybe Matt Corral after what we saw in the Tennessee game, but it's not so far beyond the realm of possibilities that this could be a thing. For what it's worth, I threw $5 on him at 50-1 earlier today.
Hey, because, why not?
Because his name is there, and because I could.
Other side of the ball, Zach Evans doesn't play. Max Duggan plays with a broken bone in his foot.
Yep.
So complete worry. If you have the losing effort sound at the ready, he was great.
Yeah, and that's the other thing here. Oklahoma with an offense is great. Mm-hmm. And Oklahoma's defense has improved under Alex Grinch. I think we agree that much.
Sure.
But the defensive showing for Oklahoma is a little bit hidden by the gloss of Caleb Williams because they got torched. They got torched through the air.
Man.
Max Duggan.
Quentin Johnston, man.
Max Duggan went off. I get that Oklahoma is banged up in the secondary, but it's just something to take note of because, again, they've got some teams who have shown an ability to throw.
Yeah.
They're still on the schedule. They've got the Texas Tech game. They can throw. We know Baylor, Gary Bohannon's had a good year. Even Brock Purdy. We're in Brocktober now, but Brock Purdy looked really good in his game. So throwing it out there. Don't forget about this Oklahoma secondary as they move forward.
Something Oklahoma did, by the way, really impressively, and this is something I think Dabo, I don't know if he coined the term or has just really leaned into the term, the middle eight term, the last 4 minutes of the first half, the first four of the second half. It's a 17-14 game, Oklahoma, TCU ball. They do nothing a couple minutes before halftime, and Oklahoma immediately gets it back, drives the field, touchdown, gets the ball at the start of the second half, touchdown, and it goes from being tight to a little looser. And so that is, to me, a hallmark of a very strong team, because there's nothing more infuriating as a fan of a team than to have the ball, to have that opportunity, and to squander it and see your opponent, who you know you have to give everything to beat, take advantage. And that's what OU is able to do. So hopefully this is a sign of more growth from the Sooners, and TCU can go back to the drawing board and figure out better situational play.
It might be time to move on from Gary Patterson.
Whoa.
It might be time.
I don't know what, I mean, this defense, you look back at, like, so they peaked probably in 2014 with the team that was playoff-ish, that was right there.
And that defense was the calling card for him, right?
Of course. And I don't know if it's a lack of evolution, I don't know if it's bad development, I don't know if it's bad evaluation, bad whatever, bad injury luck, but it's been a defense that's been 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, maybe a 19th in the country, like an impressive, but then you have a step back, 40, 50, whatever. It's a bad defense right now. It is a bad defense that gives up way too much. And I don't think you get rid of Gary Patterson, but I think you go back to the drawing board in a big way about the architecture of this defense.
There's something that is amiss because we keep waiting. We keep waiting for that tribute album to show up. And it's not. It's just not been good on defense. So anyway, big win for Oklahoma. Big game for Caleb Williams. Elsewhere in the Big 12, we had Iowa State winning the Farmageddon game 33-20. I watched a good chunk of this game because it was a lock of the week.
No, you got this. You nailed it.
For yours truly, K-State had a chance to screw up the cover late. They had a chance. It was a 6.5-point spread at kickoff, but Wildcats ran out of time. Otherwise, I thought a really sound effort from Iowa State. Brock Purdy missed three throws all game, no picks. Breece Hall, close to 200 yards, had two touchdowns on the ground. I am warning everybody now. Iowa State, when they run the table.
You have them beating OU?
When they run the table, when they beat OU, I want you to remember all the way back to week 7 when I told you it was going to happen.
And you will react accordingly. You will show it off.
I will pat myself on the back, as I always do.
I like it. You're cuckoo for the clones, and I respect it. You've planted your flag. Yeah, Iowa State, you were right about this, that, you know, the results against Iowa, the result against against Baylor, which was unfortunately a characteristic loss for the clones with special teams. But no, you're absolutely right that they deserve fear from the Big 12 at this point if their act is relatively together, and they still have Breece Hall. They still have Breece Hall toting the rock.
It's the same team.
It's scary.
It's the same team. Just don't forget about Iowa State. You mentioned Baylor also.
Lock of the week.
My second lock of the week, despite the fact that I can't pick Big 12 teams, it turned out okay this week. Baylor 38, BYU 24. This is a good win for Baylor.
We both had this one at least, yeah.
Both had Baylor. Gary Bohannon finally threw his first pick of the year early in the quarter, first quarter.
Right.
But then pulled it together and had a pretty damn good game. He's just really been good so far this season. And you combine that with the tour de force of the Baylor ground attack behind Abram Smith and Tristan Ebner. 38 carries for 283. between those two, three touchdowns, all three of them came from Smith on the ground. A really solid effort offensively. No penalties for Baylor. No penalties, which is helpful. They're a disciplined team. They're playing well. They are off next week, but they finish out with Texas, TCU, Oklahoma, Kansas State, and Texas Tech. So we will find out much more about Baylor. That story is not written fully yet, but in the early going here for Baylor to do what they've done, it's just damn impressive. I'm really impressed with the job that Dave Aranda's done with this team.
Yeah, as I like to point out every time they have a big win, Ty was ready to bury Gary. He was wary of Gary.
I was wary of Gary, yeah.
But here we are celebrating Airy Gary as he throws the ball downfield. I have notes. I have yarn on my walls with adjectives. No, Baylor's good, and you know it doesn't bring me any joy to say it. I don't know how long Dave Aranda's going to be for Waco. If this keeps up, yeah.
Would he go back to LSU?
That's interesting enough. I think his daughter goes to Baylor, but that can all change. But we heard for a long time that his aspirations were in the NFL. And so I don't know if he follows Matt Rhule into that kind of world, but it's when you look this good in year two, given what Baylor lost after 2019, and when the offense is as together as it is with him having his defensive background, which to me clearly means he has delegated things. He isn't meddling with the offense and letting Grimey do his thing. And you have a confident offense. They're running well. They're making plays. They're not getting penalized, Ty.
No.
That's good coaching. That is discipline. That is a staff and a personnel group that are on the same page. So, yeah, I doesn't bring me joy, but Dave Aranda might only be there for another year or two.
No penalties in a big game.
Yeah.
A big game, no less. Don't forget, this is a big game
because totally.
BYU was undefeated until a week ago. Now they've got two losses. So, good game for Jaren Hall, by the way. We shouldn't overlook that.
Slow start-ish, but yeah, they scored early, but then kind of went away. By the way, did you see, speaking of just coaches, I like Kalani Sitake on the sideline running with Jaren Hall when he pulled the zone read and like losing his mind. I love enthusiasm, Ty. So I love seeing it from Kalani Sitake.
And he's done a good job too.
Totally.
This season. Don't overlook the fact that BYU had some challenges coming into the year. They were one of those teams that, you know, there was some turnover there. We don't need to talk anymore about
quarterback.
Losing your starting quarterback to the NFL in the manner that they did, but they've put together a nice season. It's going to remain a good season regardless of which direction it goes from here on out. So Baylor wins by 14, 38-24 over BYU. And finally, we had Texas Tech 41, Kansas 14, 244 yards and four touchdowns on the ground for Texas Tech, Dan.
Awesome. Yeah, a quiet, nice story is Henry Columbia coming in. I always screw up his last name. Columbia coming in and making plays, and you know, the offense looking good with Matt Wells on the hot seat coming into the year. Hope it keeps up for Tech. And by the way, didn't mention Dylan Doyle, by the way, for Baylor. The honorary. Every year we get a linebacker who ends up in the backfield as either a fullback. What was the guy for Stanford? Obviously, we had the guy at West Virginia. Named Owen. They're usually named Owen.
Owen Schmidt. But this was
Owen Schmidt. Thank you. And this was Dylan Doyle, who ended up in the end zone and had a sack. So always like to see it.
Let's go over to the Big Ten. A couple games worth discussing. Michigan State 20, Indiana 15. So I ran up to Mama H's yesterday.
Owen Marisic. They are always named Owen.
They're always
named Stanford.
Owen.
Yeah. Sorry. Continue.
I was in the car a little bit yesterday. I ran up to Mama H's. Hadn't seen her in a while.
Yeah.
And so I was listening. Sirius XM Channel 84, College Football Blitz. Her boy,
always
Stevie Speedrun, giving us the lowdown on what goes on in college football. And he kept referring to this game as Big Ten football with kind of like that shrugging tone in his voice. You know what I mean? Like, well, it's Big Ten football.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't have been more right, Dan.
Yeah.
Could not have been more right. The final was 20-15. The point spread was always a little weird here. Just 3.5 in favor of the Spartans at kickoff. And if you've been paying attention, you get the impression that Vegas does not take Michigan State all that seriously.
I mean, given the second half of the Nebraska game, given some struggles on offense, although I've thought Peyton Thorne, obviously, and Kenny Walker. Can we call him Kenny? Does he prefer Kenneth? I never know.
I prefer Kenny Dubs, but...
Kenny Dubs, sure.
Either way.
Yeah, there is part of the Michigan State experience that there are going to be offensive slogs. And so doubting the undefeated potential of Michigan State is realistic.
It's absolutely realist. And look, this was a clunker. That's, I don't know how else you phrase it. This was a clunker. 241 yards of total offense for Michigan State. Peyton Thorne threw two picks. Had an awesome catch. Maybe the catch of the day. I don't know if you saw that.
It was. I did see it on a trick play. He catches it falling backwards out of bounds, toe taps in for a nice special teams completion. Yeah, it was great.
I would love to see the numbers. I don't know if Bill Connolly has this on those reverse passes, the number of times the receiver decides they're going to throw it.
Yeah.
Because more often than not, they should probably either just take a knee or throw it out of bounds or not do anything. But in this case, back foot throw, heave it up. Peyton Thorne thankfully goes up and gets it and does the toe tap and comes down with a really nice catch. But, you know, he had a bit of a rough day, two picks. Mm-hmm. Kenneth Walker III, whatever you want to call him, held to just 84 yards on the ground. Sparty had 12 penalties. So a clunker. It was a clunker.
Sure.
Michigan State's on bye next week before they host Michigan on Halloween weekend. That will be a battle.
A battle to 17 points. Yeah.
A battle to 17 points.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks from now is going to be nuts. Clear your schedules accordingly. Just putting you on notice. Next week is, you can kind of settle into it. you can be okay next week if you don't watch any college football. It's fine. We'll forgive you. But week nine is going to be nuts. Be forewarned.
So that Halloween weekend?
Halloween weekend. Be forewarned.
Okay.
And on the Indiana side, look.
Listen.
The resume is comical at this point. Comical. Comical from the standpoint of who they played. All right, I'm not making fun of Indiana. They've played Iowa, Cincinnati, Penn State, and Michigan State. And they host Ohio State next weekend. And they still get Michigan in November. That's a very tough schedule.
Yeah.
So Tom Allen's got his work cut out for him. I promised I'd play this for Bradley, our boy. Micah McFadden, the defender for Indiana, single-handedly putting a bit of a dent in the Kenny Walker III Heisman campaign. Micah McFadden had a really good game for the Indiana defense. But Indiana, you know, they started Jack Tuttle in this game.
Did you see the historic fact about Jack Tuttle?
I did, actually.
He was one of three. He's one of three quarterbacks since 2000. It was Tuttle, Tanner. Oh, now I forget his last name. The Wake Forest quarterback, Ty.
Tanner. I always want to say Tanner Morgan, but yeah, Tanner Price.
I think it's Tanner Price and Brady Quinn, who have thrown the ball at least 52 times, but were held under 200 total passing yards.
Crazy.
That's rough. That's rough.
Any other thoughts in this game before we move on?
No, good for Michigan State for winning a clunker. You get the pick six to make it comfortable. I mean, they get the pick six early on, but no, good for, you know, you stay undefeated, do whatever you can.
Minnesota 30, Nebraska 23. PJ Fleck was fired up. He jumped into the eager arms of a big old police officer after the W here. Big bro hug. I don't know if you saw that. Tanner Morgan threw two picks, but was damn near perfect otherwise.
Yeah, he was really good.
He got Chris Ottman bell back. Do you have the bell sound? Thank you.
You know I do.
11 for 103 and a touchdown through the air. Minnesota's 4-2 now. I've been talking them down all year, saying how bad this team is.
Yeah.
They're definitely not great, but they've had injuries. They're much better than I've been giving them credit for. And listen to the next six games. Maryland, Northwestern, Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, and Wisconsin. Can they win two of those? Yes, they can. Can they go to a bowl game? Yes, they can. So
they
keep
can
your
win four
eyes.
Or five of those.
Keep your Why eyes not? Trained on Minnesota. Do not forget about Minnesota.
They're a good reason not to be, and same with Purdue, to be absolutist about September, right? That teams are going to just disappear for a week. The best teams don't. But most teams are going to mail in a couple weeks for whatever reason, because of injury, because of lack of focus, because of distraction of some kind. They're college kids. It's going to happen. Impressed by Minnesota. This was a game that, you know, Nebraska moved the ball, but they came up big in big spots in the red zone. Nebraska had opportunities and they were squandered. And that's, you know, what is Scott Frost now? 5-17 in one possession games at Nebraska. I mean, what is the perception of him if he is 8-8? If he is 10-11? Like 5-17, I mean, my math tells me that he would have been 11-11 if we're going to talk about 22 games. But yeah, it's just there never seems to be a plan. The red zone has been quite ugly. The last 5 minutes of games have been quite ugly. Not saying anything Nebraska fans don't already know.
No, they had, I counted, 3 real opportunities in the second half here.
Yep.
Where they were in Minnesota territory. They got stood up at the goal line. They missed a kick. They had a turnover on, or they turned the ball over on 4 downs deep inside Minnesota territory in the fourth quarter as well.
Yeah.
So they had opportunities.
That was the story against Michigan early, right?
It was.
That was, you know,
it
driving
was.
The field and not picking up a fourth and short deep in Wolverine territory. Yeah.
Frustrating. Okay. Wisconsin 20, Army 14.
Yeah, I didn't watch any of this. Sorry.
So look, I watched a little. Forgive me.
It's okay.
Wisconsin had control of this game because of their defense. That's been the Wisconsin story.
Yeah.
And the defense forced a really big fumble deep in Army territory late in the fourth quarter. They ran it in from a yard away. That sealed the deal for Wisconsin. This is still a very broken offensive team.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin had almost as many rushing attempts as Army did.
Yeah.
So they need to figure this thing out. They should be beating Army by more than 6. Granted, a bit of a garbage time score for Army, but nonetheless, you've come to expect more from Wisconsin, but I think what we know of this season is that it's not going according to the plan for Paul Chris. So I look for improvement week to week. I don't know if I've seen it quite yet.
Right.
20-14 does not leave me feeling all that satisfied if I'm a Wisconsin football fan, but you'll take the W.
Yeah. I mean, there's been at least, what, one running back? I mean, Jalen Berger was just dismissed from the team. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't see the details of that, but Wisconsin certainly trying to find solutions on offense wherever they might be. Graham Mertz was, I don't know, from what I could tell, okay. I mean, Army's a decent enough team, and it's a very tricky team to beat if they're operating. But yeah, I suppose good for Wisconsin for winning this game. But you know, there were other games that took priority, and for my own mental health, not watching the Wisconsin offense was beneficial.
All right, let's go through the Pac-12 here quick, and then we'll close it out with the ACC. We had 5 games of note in the Pac-12. We had Utah, 35-21 over Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
We had Oregon, 24-17. This one was played on Friday night over Cal. UCLA, 24-17 over Washington. Wazoo, 34, Stanford, 31. And Colorado blanks Arizona. Oof. 34-0. That one played at Folsom Field. We had a caller call in, say nobody scores at Folsom Field. So there you go. Where do you want to start here, Dan? You want to start with Oregon?
I guess. I don't have much to say. I went through this game relatively quickly. I didn't stay up Friday night because, again, when you don't have to watch an offense and it'll help your mental health, maybe you should take that opportunity. I watched this. I skimmed through this game yesterday morning early, and I don't know. It seems like it's more of the same. I know Oregon's beat up on defense, but Oregon right now is around a Cal, Stanford, Arizona type team, given their results in the conference. It's not a difficult Pac-12 by any stretch. Oregon is the most talented team. They are a team that has not fired their coach, and they cannot distance themselves, especially at home, from games where they just can't seem to get up. Anthony Brown made a couple more plays downfield, but missed too many throws, rocketing short crossing routes. The defense had untimely penalties, and I don't know. We're in year 4 of Mario Cristobal, and it's more of the same. He's something like 5-15 as a favorite at Autzen, covering the spread. Just with a more talented team, they don't distance themselves from clearly lesser teams. They make mistakes late. They're in these tight games against these struggling teams, struggling defenses like Cal and Stanford, and I'm nearing the point, if I'm not already there, where Oregon just is what they are under Mario Cristobal. They're unable to figure things out at quarterback when they have a great one or a less than great one in Anthony Brown. And I don't know. It just seems like a very specific strategy for Mario Cristobal teams. And, you know, they're playing way off the ball on defense and giving receivers space doesn't seem to be working out. This is what it is. Oregon's going to win a bunch of games, and I don't really look forward to watching Mario Cristobal Oregon games. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I watched the end of this game, and Cal had a chance to win, or at least to tie, let's say.
Yeah, they were deep, ready
they were
to,
deep
to tie
in there,
this game.
And
yeah.
and they had an opportunity. They weren't able to convert, but they had a run at it. And I was surprised as well that this game was as close as it is, but you called it. You said they're going to win by 7. So Cal plus the 13.5 points cashed the bet.
Pretty happy Oregon got Ohio State when they did, because that's seeming more and more like an aberration that, you know, Mario Cristobal teams get up for huge games and just try to draft the rest of the way. I don't know. It's not fun.
Utah won 35-21. They trailed 21-7 at half and then decided they were going to mount a second half charge. They scored 28 unanswered points to knock off ASU. What a turn of events, man. I tell you, a big part of this was Cam Rising. Cam Rising, who our very own Travis May on solidverbal.com, if you don't go out every Tuesday and read sneaky stats, he talked about Cam Rising and how the Utah offense was 30% more efficient under him than it was under Charlie Brewer. Cam Rising goes 13 of 15 in the second half to lead this charge back and to ultimately win by 14 points. An incredible tale of two halves here. ASU, if you watched any part of this game early, had Utah on their heels in the first half.
Yeah.
And they were chaining together big plays, explosive plays. You're thinking, how is Utah going to put this thing back together? But totally different story after halftime. You got to give Utah credit. Again, we've called out a number of times now the adversity that they're going through as a team, but just a sound coaching effort from Kyle Whittingham to first off get Cam Rising on the field, and then secondly to not give up at halftime when things clearly did not feel like they were going in the Utes' way. So good for them. We had a caller talk about Utes being in first place, the Pac-12 South, so good on them.
Yeah, Utah coming on strong. I mean, it would be nice if they played two halves in some of these games. But yeah, LV Bunkley Shelton had a hell of a play for ASU. They ran the ball well in the first half. Jaden Daniels was dealing. 13 penalties for ASU. They thought they had kind of turned a corner in terms of discipline and penalties. Didn't happen against Utah. And I mean, I suppose good for the Utes surviving those couple picks from Cam Rising and seemed like a pretty complete performance. You got the Britton Covey play that you always like when a receiver is going to throw the ball, but then decide, let's not. And picked up a first down doing so. And Utah, I would say that the Utah-UCLA game is going to decide almost maybe the conference after UCLA beat Washington the way that they did. But I don't even know. These two teams are so inconsistent. UCLA gets kind of blown out by ASU. Utah has some issues still in playing complete games, but Utah's certainly one of the teams that has been ascending in the conference and good to see for a conference that needs it badly.
Do you have anything to add on the UCLA win, the Wazoo win, or the Colorado shutout of Arizona?
No, I mean, the Washington offense is a mess, remains a mess. UCLA did a pretty good job. They got beat, you know, downfield a couple times. But yeah, Zach Charbonnet is crazy fun to watch. The UCLA defense made plays in the passing game, especially, and got after Dylan Morris. ZTF came back for Washington, by the way.
Yeah,
out
man.
Of nowhere.
How?
I mean, recovered. I know Jimmy Lake has mentioned it, but like just an Achilles injury to come back as quickly as he did.
In 6 months?
Something like that.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, happened good over spring. Wazoo with a really nice comeback win against Stanford. Stanford tries like hell to sort of generate those PI opportunities, those receivers, but a really nice comeback win. They fall down relatively late, but Jaden Delora leads a charge. Max Borgi had a really nice game. He and Deion McIntosh have been splitting time in that backfield. It feels like Max Borgi has been around forever. Don't know what Nick Rolovich's future is going to be, given all that swirls around the vaccine mandate in Washington and his refusal to get it. But really nice for Wazoo to sort of stay in a game for four quarters. They've been fading early on in the season and mount the comeback that they did.
Let's close it out with the ACC, Dan. We had Pitt by 21 over Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
We had NC State by 26 over Boston College. We had the Clemson 3-point win in the Carrier Dome.
I don't have the sound, but it's fun.
17-14. This one was played on Friday. Virginia blanks Duke 48-0. And as we talked about on the Solid Saturday live stream, it wasn't a marquee matchup. It looked like it could have been one at the start of the season before we got into this thing. Mm-hmm. But North Carolina-Miami was a fun game. It ended up being a very fun game.
I don't think it was fun for either North Carolina or Miami fans.
No.
But for the rest of us.
For the rest of us. For the rest of us. 45-42. Let's start at the top here.
Yeah.
With the Pitt game. This was not close. This was not a close game. Pitt led 28-0 with about 9 minutes left in the third quarter. 140 yards on the ground for Israel Abanaconda. Love the name. And the Pitt Panthers. Virginia Tech outgained 411-224. Rough outing for Braxton Burmeister. Really rough outing.
Windy affair in Blacksburg.
Very windy affair. Pitt is now in this spot where they're 5-1. They play host to Clemson next week. They've got Miami, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, and Syracuse left on the schedule. It stands to reason. You get by Clemson, who I still think is probably the best of those teams that are remaining on the schedule.
Without evidence appearing quite clearly right now, but okay.
You could talk yourself into an 11-1 Pitt.
Sure.
It's not that.
I mean, what is Kenny Pickett? Is Kenny Pickett clearly the best quarterback in the ACC?
He might have to be, Dan. I don't know. I mean, Devin Leary's looked good.
Sure. And Devin gets to throw to a Devin. And Devin Carter, who makes ridiculous catches every week, it seems. So I don't know if Kenny throws to a Kenny. So there's an advantage there. But otherwise,
either way.
Sam Howell's season, not necessarily his fault, but it hasn't been Sam Howell's season. It hasn't been, you know, fully Jordan Travis,
Brennan Armstrong,
Kenzie Milton season, Jeff Sims. Brennan Armstrong's been fine. He's been impressive. But I think Kenny Pickett is, it's hard to make a case against Kenny Pickett as the clear best quarterback in the ACC right now. Right?
Pitt won by 24.
Sam Hartman.
Or by 21.
Oh. Yeah.
We had NC State by 26. This was the kind of game that NC State needed to win. They needed to prove that they could go on the road and play against a decent team, at least in Boston College. Sort of a slow first half, but they picked up steam, leaned on their defense, created turnovers and short fields, and then they were really good at executing in the second half. 23 unanswered points for the Wolfpack as they go on the road and win. We will have to follow their plate now moving forward because NC State seems to have something of an inside lane in getting to that ACC championship game.
Oh, yeah.
The Clemson game, we sort of alluded to it earlier in the show, and if you watched any of the live stream we did on Saturday, we talked about this game, but Clemson was outgained on the road at Syracuse. Syracuse had Sean Tucker go for 156 on the ground, which in and of itself I think was a feat against this defense. It's a team that's banged up in Clemson. It's an offense that I think we've acknowledged at this point is somewhat broken. We don't have to dunk on Clemson, but
sure.
Syracuse had their opportunity here to knock off Clemson. They weren't able to get the job done, but it just does not feel like it is getting better per se at Clemson. DJU, as one of our callers pointed out, has Clemson to a point where they're just sort of interesting adjacent. And that's not where the Tigers thought they were going to be at this point through 7 weeks of the college football season.
When people throw my silly terms back at me in serious ways, it makes me unreasonably happy. I'm so happy when that happens. I saw somebody, I don't know if it was on Twitter or some site or whatever, wherever it was, somebody in a thought exercise, what is Clemson's record with a replacement or even just slightly more than replacement level defensive coordinator? Mm. Like, do they, if they have the 28th best national defensive coordinator, are they 1-5?
It's a great question. It's a great question.
Getting by BC with a backup quarterback, barely. Getting by Georgia Tech, barely.
Yeah.
Losing to Georgia. Getting by Syracuse, barely.
Well, it's a great
Things
point.
Things are not good.
No, it's not. It's not good. Clemson wins, but it's not necessarily getting better on offense.
Has a coach ever saved his job by losing impressively? Because Dino Babers, at this point, with the way they lost to Wake, with the way that they lost to Clemson, Dino may have saved his job by simply, I mean, look, the Tony White hire defensive coordinator was unquestionably very strong. The move to Garrett Schrader has been very strong. The running game with Sean Tucker has been very strong. But it is kind of interesting. I don't know what his buyout is. So maybe he wasn't getting dismissed anyway, but I don't know. It's interesting to think about.
And we'll close out the ACC with the UNC Miami game.
Yeah.
Sam Howell accounts for 4 touchdowns. Again, he's the primary focal point of this offense. He had 154 and 2 touchdowns through the air. On the ground, 17 carries for 98 yards.
Yeah.
And 2 touchdowns. He is the offense. I feel like Miami's kind of on the verge of collapse at this point.
Well, both of these teams are.
They're now down Cameron Harris, who left on the first drive of the second half. Their leading rusher has not been a good season for Manny Diaz and Coral Gables.
No. Between the injuries, obviously highlighted by Derek King. I didn't watch a ton of this game. I skimmed through it pretty quickly this morning, and I was entertained by it. But, yeah, two teams absolutely reeling that I really didn't see
this happening. No one did.
No.
What else do we got here? Otherwise, we mentioned the Cincinnati win earlier. San Diego State needed double overtime. It was 6-6.
Was it 19-13? What was the final on
it was,
that?
Yeah, the final was 19-13. It was 6-6 at the end of regulation. What else do we have? Bailey Zappi, another.
Yeah, man.
Great. We have to get Bailey Zappi on the show. I don't know if he does podcasts, but we need to talk to Bailey Zappi.
I have
Zappi.
A sound for him. We had a Tuesday night game. Louisiana obliterated App State.
Yep.
Right? Otherwise, I don't know. Marshall quietly has gotten to 4-3. And they lost there. It's Purdue's defensive coordinator, Brad Lambert, was the one who was doing such a good job for the Thundering Herd. So a nice little addition there for the Boilers. UConn won a game, Ty.
Yes, they did.
Was it against an FBS team? Don't ask. You're asking too many questions. It was against Yale, and they kind of snuck by Yale, 21-15. Tulsa improving once again. They win late in a comeback win against USF. Buffalo wins late, or they win close anyway. Sorry, I lost the score there. It was 27-26, and it was a furious comeback for the Bulls over Ohio, who Armani Rogers had a long run. That's about as much as I can say that's good about Ohio this year. You mentioned Virginia Duke. I don't know how much else. Toledo's having a disappointing year. NIU's running back Jay Ducker had a dude game. He ran for over 200 yards. Fresno State blanked Wyoming.
Yeah.
I got some suggestions for making this Dvorak. I don't think I will. But yeah, Fresno State 5-2, right?
Yeah.
That's a thing.
It's a
Fresno
thing.
State playing well. I don't know how much else. Colorado State had a great kicking game, if that impresses you, as they beat New Mexico. UNLV so close to finally winning a game at home. I don't know if you saw that, like the players get around a what's it called? A slot machine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like their big celebration
sure.
thing. But they lose to Utah State. Otherwise, I don't know. Liberty lost as like 32-point favorites. Did you see that to Monroe?
I did. Yeah, I did.
Oh my God.
That's not good.
And UTEP is bowl eligible, Ty.
They
beat Louisiana
baby.
Tech. They beat La Tech 19-3. Air Force, by the way, gets to 6-1 as they beat Boise in Boise. Nevada beats Hawaii. And I'm pretty sure, didn't UTSA blow somebody out?
UTSA won 45-0.
They won 45-0.
Roadrunners.
They're 7-0. Jeff Traylor's Roadrunners, Ty. Come on. Sincere McCormick, you feeling good?
Feeling great. Feeling great. Okay. Shall we go to our dude alerts and close this out?
Let's.
Who were our dudes for week 7, Dan?
It was, well, I mentioned Ducker for NIU, but Ty Davis Price is at the top for me. David Bell, Chris Ottman Bell, Double Bell, Bo Nix, Caleb Williams, Oklahoma State's defense, just in general, the way that they got better over the course of that game. Matt Corral, Bailey Zappi, Breece Hall, Jerome Ford, and I have here Quentin Johnston for TCU as well, who, by the way, had a touchdown catch on a ball that went through his arms that he kneed back up into his chest and caught and continued running with. So, yeah, the Max Duggan, Quentin Johnston connection was impressive, but again, in a losing effort. So those are my dudes. Oh, and Dylan Doyle, once again. Come on, I'll mention him twice. That went two ways. I always appreciate that, especially when he's not named Owen.
All righty. Well, we appreciate everybody stopping on by. We had a ton of participation this week through social media, our Discord over on verballers.com, which is teeming with college football fans talking about the games on Saturday. We had a ton of calls to 408-VERBAL-1. I would encourage everybody to go on out to our Instagram. Go and follow the Solid Verbal Instagram. Maybe Tuesday afternoon-ish, Tuesday morning, we'll post the extended cut, the Dylan version of our reverbs, because there are other callers that I know he's featured on his that I did not have an opportunity to feature on mine. So if you called in and if you didn't hear yourself, follow us on Instagram. We'll post that version of it. I don't want that to go to waste because he did a really good job mixing all your calls together.
Yes.
Late last night.
Did Owen Schmidt play linebacker? I know he was a fullback, and now I'm questioning myself. I've been thinking about it for like a half hour. I think he may have just played fullback.
Either way.
Now, I don't remember. Still impressive.
Either way, damn impressive. Week 8, we will discuss on our preview show. Again, yes. That preview show is going to be available early to our Patreon subscribers at verballers.com. You can get that on Tuesday afternoon. Everybody else, you'll be able to hear that on Wednesday morning, as we've been dropping all of our preview shows and all of our shows this season, 6 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Dan.
There are 2.5, 3.5 interesting games next week. I don't know. I mean, USC, Notre Dame. I don't know how you feel about that. It's a different kind of slate next week. We got LSU, Ole Miss, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Oregon, UCLA, the Chip Kelly matchup. I don't know. It's different. That's all I have.
We'll have fun with it. For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hillebrand, thanks so much for downloading, for listening, for supporting the show. We will be back in just a few short days. In the meantime, as always, stay solid.
Peace.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.